The third case to be argued this morning is number 2016-995, Fairfield Township Board of Trustees versus the Tax Commissioner. For the appellant, Mr. Hust.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. I won't go into a lot of the factual background unless you need me to, but this, as you know, involves a tax increment financing district in the in the township. What this case is really not about, it's not about priorities of the exemptions. What it is a case about a covenant running with the land, which was contained in a developer service agreement, which was a collateral agreement to the actual TIF itself. I could, Your Honor, sorry.
Certainly.
Had a bit of a coughing episode there. And it's simply our position that this agreement between the developer of the land was binding on successors in title. The agreement is very clear about that. It was recorded in the records of Butler County. And some years after that, the church, in this case, purchased the property, filed for a tax exemption, which the township was not aware of, not notified, because under the statute, they're not required to be. Township unsuccessfully sought to intervene. That was dismissed by the BTA, so the township filed a complaint against the continued exemption of the property, contending that the covenant running with the land binds the church as a matter of contract law, real covenant law, to continue to make service payments. I don't think, at least I didn't notice in the tax commissioner's brief that there's really any serious dispute, but that this was a covenant running with the land. Now the tax commissioner in his decision said that he believed he didn't have jurisdiction to consider common law arguments. The case went to the Board of Tax Appeals, and that issue really wasn't addressed by the board's opinion, but the board did not make any statement that it felt that it agreed with that, and we think the law is pretty clear based on the Coles case that the tax commissioner did have jurisdiction, to consider our argument about the covenant.
Let me stop you right there. You mentioned the developer's service agreement,
yes.
And there are several documents in the record,
yes.
And you also mentioned that that's a separate document from the actual TIF agreement. Is the TIF agreement that you're referring to, is that in the record as well?
Yes, and actually it's a resolution of the Township Trustees that creates the Tax Increment Financing District. In fact, the resolution refers to the fact that there may be agreements with other parties in the future, but the developer service agreement wasn't actually part of the TIF resolution. One thing, this is a housekeeping thing. We filed stipulations of fact with the joint stipulations with the Board of Tax Appeals, and the developer service agreement, which contains the covenant, the copy of that was defective, was missing a number of pages. However, the complete agreement is in the statutory record, so it can be found. So the missing pages are there. And all the collateral agreements after the TIF resolution, the county had to approve because the county was going to provide the construction. There were bonds being issued. There was another agreement with the school district. They consented to the TIF in return for a payment of a percentage. So This occurs in 1999, that is the TIF, and in 2004, the legislature passed, I think it's Substitute House Bill 427, I'll just call it House Bill 427, which was designed to deal with priorities among competing exemptions. And I think it's pretty clear, if this covenant running with the land were not involved, that the operation of that statute would put the church's exemption in front of the TIF exemption. And I believe that is basically the tax commissioner's position, that that statute controls competing exemptions. But we're not arguing about the exemption, we're talking about a separate contractual obligation binding on subsequent owners to continue to make payments.
Let me ask you a question about this. The proceeding, as you've outlined it, this is a tax exemption case, a case of whether or not the House of Public Worship exemption should continue. Yeah. To the extent there's some kind of a common law claim of the covenant running with the land, is that really before the BTA and the court in a case like this?
We believe it is, based upon the Supreme Court's decision in the Coles, Illinois case versus, I think it was, the Marion County Board of Revision. In that case, there was a covenant in an agreement that said that, and I'm paraphrasing, the owner and subsequent owners agreed they wouldn't file complaints to seek to decrease the valuation of the property. And the Board of Revision at the local level, if I recall, ruled that it didn't have jurisdiction because of that covenant, that basically goes up to the Board of Tax Appeals and then to the Supreme Court, which concluded that no, that's not an impediment to the jurisdiction, but that they remanded it because it hadn't really been presented or argued back at the BOR level. But I believe based on Coles that the tax commissioner, BTA, and this court have jurisdiction to consider the covenant.
And well, of course, the covenant there was a covenant that directly addressed whether or not the tax appeal could go forward.
Yes.
And the covenant that you're talking about here is whether or not certain payments have to be made.
Correct. And the tax commissioner doesn't seriously dispute that it is a covenant. It was of record. It was binding on subsequent owners. I believe that the argument here is by the tax commissioner that, hey, this House Bill 427 was a uniform approach to managing priorities among competing exemptions. The township didn't file a notice, and therefore it lost its place in line, went behind the church, and that should dispose of it. The church is in front. The township also argues that there's some language in the statute that prohibits payment of service payments and minimum service payments by someone holding an exemption that's in the front of the line. We addressed that at some length in the brief. That our position is simply that even if you read the statute that way, it does not void the contract that was created by the covenant running with the land. And how much time do I have left? Okay, I'd like to reserve three. Thank you. So the second issue relates that we've raised is the constitutionality of whether if the statute is applied in this case to bump the covenant or knock it out or whatever term you want to use, that it's an impairment of obligation of contracts. And there are a multitude of contracts that and obligations that are impacted by saying the church doesn't have to pay the service payments, including paying off the bonds, which were used to construct the public improvements, utilities, et cetera. Tax commissioner cites, I think it was, firstly, really cites a couple of cases, and I think broadly argues that because the township is a political subdivision, it doesn't have any constitutional rights it can assert against the state. In this case, I guess the General Assembly who passed the law. However, I don't think that's really, I think that's much broader reading of those cases. The Avon Lakes School District case that they cite involved the district asserting equal protection and due process arguments under the 14th Amendment. And the court, this court in that case, said no, you don't have standing to raise those kind of arguments. They also cite a more recent case involving the Toledo City School District. That case, of course, involved a retroactive adjustment to school foundation funds. However, the case really was decided on the retroactivity clause of Article 2, Section 28, not the impairment of contracts clause. I think that that case doesn't resolve that issue. And we have cited to another Supreme Court case, City of Middletown, that involved briefly a road project. The city entered into contracts with the Ohio Department of Transportation, which was kind of acting as a conduit for federal funds. They passed an ordinance to approve that. They passed ordinances so the roads could actually be built. Then there was a public initiative. This is after the roads already under construction, to void the contract, saying that, and the initiative passed by the voters, saying we don't want this. The in that case, this court held that was an impairment of obligation of contracts, and that the city could assert that argument. And in fact, the city won in the case. This court agreed that the voters' actions in passing a law impaired the obligation of contracts, and it specifically compared, I'll find this statement here by the court. The court in Middletown, this court in Middletown, said that the impairment prohibition in Article 2, Section 28 reaches any form of legislative action, including direct action by the people. So we believe, A, that we have standing to raise that, and B, if you apply House Bill 427 to knock out this covenant, you're impairing obligations of contract.
Let me go back to the sort of the statutory and common law a part of your argument. The township's contention here is that the contract rights and the covenant rights running with the land overcome or override the exemption, even if there's a priority of exemption under House Bill 427, that the common law or the covenant rights override that exemption. Is that the fair characterization?
I don't know that override is fair, but because this covenant, first of all, was entered into prior to House Bill 427. It was entered into, and I think the developer service agreement was executed in 1999.
Supersede, I guess, would be the word.
Well, I don't think that these contractual rights are incompatible or in any way. I would say, if you want to use the term override, I would say, yes, the parties have the right to contract around what the statute provides in terms of priorities. And in this case, the contractual rights arose before the statute was even passed. And it doesn't really affect, once the TIF is over, the church is exempt, which will be relatively soon, since it was
this year?
This year or early next. It was a 20-year TIF.
Right.
And offhand, I don't remember if they're measuring it from 1999 when they actually started work or back to 98. But in any event, it will expire in the near future. The church's exemption would continue in place. What we're saying is that you can't use that exemption to avoid the contractual obligation in the covenant to continue to make the payments.
And I guess that brings me back to something I was alluding to earlier, is whether or not anything other than the right of exemption, the right to be free of paying taxes and possibly in lieu of payments, the issue here is exemption. I mean, the only issue before the court is continued exemption of the church or not.
Yeah. Essentially what we're arguing is that the continued exemption was a breach of the covenant. And that would have been, like in Coles, this court suggested that the, I think it was the school district and the county, should have, and they actually remanded it, go back to the board and say, okay, present the covenant that you contend prevents the taxpayer from filing. You know, you put on that evidence. It's like in the nature of an affirmative defense, I think is the term the court used. Here, what we're saying is that we have this right, and that should prevent the exemption. We have a contractual right to stop the continued exemption of it based upon the covenant, based upon common law, contract law, real property law.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I may have used all my time.
Thank you. Mr. Tiefer.
Yes.
Got that right.
Thank you, Master Commissioner Mayor. May it please the court. The court should affirm for three reasons. First, the General Assembly absolutely anticipated this exact scenario where a TIF would interplay with another real property exemption. And it anticipated that and planned ahead by passing the statute. Created a clear system priority, which the BTA correctly applied. If the township wanted its TIF to trump the church's exemption, it could have taken those steps back in 2004. One of the things that hasn't been discussed this far is the General Assembly created a transition system. All the township had to do was go and file a new record with the county recorder's office. All of this problem goes away. Second, the General Assembly in this statute prohibits townships from collecting the service payments, and the township's theory doesn't explain how it can get around that general exceptionalist prohibition.
Let me ask you a question about that, because looking at the documents that are in the record, there's sort of a two layers of the service payment. There's this, what we might call the minimum payment, which is linked not to any amount of taxes, but is linked only to debt service or other items. And then there's the other element, which is actually in lieu of tax payment. Now, does the statute, House Bill 427, address both of those? I think it just says in lieu of. It precludes service charges or service payments in lieu of taxes. Does it also preclude the minimum payment?
I think so. I think it doesn't, if I remember correctly, I don't think the statute makes that differentiation between, say, what looks kind of more like a special assessment or something like that. I don't think the statute makes that distinction. The township has, as I understand it, not pursued a theory that it's entitled to the minimum amount, that it's entitled to, if nothing else, the minimum amount. So if that answers your question.
Well, and then it leads into my other question that I was asking counsel is whether or not the question of what is and is not at issue in this proceeding. We have a issue here of continuing tax exemption.
Absolutely. And I think there is a disconnect because the commissioner's job is to grant or deny exemptions and review those applications. And the BTA's job is to review those. And I think there is a disconnect that respectfully the township hasn't connected how its TIF is able to, or how the contracts it is making is able to stop the commissioner from doing what he is statutorily supposed to do and the BTA from doing what it is statutorily supposed to do. And I think that exemption is certainly the only issue that's before the court. And the third issue is there's no constitutional infirmity in this case. The township has raised certain throughout the course of litigation, due process, Section 28 issues. None of those are infirmities in this case. Even if they were, I think the court's been clear that those are issues that can't be raised by townships against the General Assembly, and that's as early as 2 years ago in the Toledo City Schools case. So basically, just a little bit of background. This was an open area in 2004. It wasn't really clear how this interconnect was going to play out. And the bottom line is the General Assembly stepped in and it quieted the waves. And for the last 15 years, the commissioners interpret us the same way. There are thousands of TIFs in the state of Ohio. Property owners, land developers, political subdivisions have relied upon this clear statute, which is very clearly on point. And there's no need for the court to throw all of that out, create all this uncertainty, and create potential issues down the road when the township simply could have taken this very easy statutory step. It's in Division C, what the notice requirement is. You've got to say who the owner is. You've got to reasonably describe the land, and you've got to walk that down to the recorder's office and file it.
Did they need to preserve their rights? Did they need to get the agreement with the then owner, or they could just do that by recording a document on their own?
I believe it could just be recorded. So the original developer was, I think, D, and I'll let the township correct me if I'm wrong on this one. The original developer, I believe, filed the exemption application, because the exemption decision is in the stipulations. I believe the applicant's name is the developer at the time. So then the only requirement is to go and re-record. So in 2004, the General Assembly takes a step of protecting landowners, because it's not really clear what the intention of the parties is. So we want to protect landowners. And in this case, the General Assembly sets up a system where we look at two different types of TIFs. One's created with the consent of the landowner, one's created without. If it's created without, any other exemption is going to trump. If it's created with, we assume the parties know what they're getting into. If you've got a school that just really wants to pay service payments, then they can come in here and they can occupy this property and then make service payments. Some of the discussions about the common law application. So first thing I want to make clear, this TIF is not special because it's been recorded or because the service document was recorded. If you look at Division C of this statute, you will see the word shall record. These TIFs need to be recorded. That's the entire point. The discussion that the common law principles really can't override that general statute that's on point in this case, and it's very clear here's what the General Assembly wanted to happen. They don't cite any case where common law has overcome a TIF statute. TIFs are modern invention. There's no Blackstone discussion on TIFs. It's a modern invention, which is really geared to this specific situation. And I think it's absolutely correct that common law simply doesn't override. I'll finish up with some of the constitutional arguments that my friend discussed. Again, there's no due process issue. The township cites no case that says it's a violation of due process to require a township to re-record something within 90 days. Even if it was, this court in Avon Lake said that's not something the township can raise. There's no retroactivity issue. If you look at Toledo City Schools, the meat and potatoes of that decision discusses Article 2, Section 28. If you look at page 365, there's a discussion on what this exact article meant in other states. If you looked a little bit prior to that, there's a discussion on what common law meant for these terms to mean back in 1851. The Toledo City School Board also made that exact same argument that, well, we've issued debt in reliance of this, and the court rejected that, and that's in their the school board's brief at 21, 45, 44, 46. All of those arguments were made in Toledo School District, and the court found them to be unpersuasive. So, if there are no more questions, thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr.
We ask the court to affirm.
Mr. Hust, you've saved a few seconds, but why don't you go ahead and take a minute to rebut?
I just want to make, just for the court's clarity, is that the only constitutional issue that we've raised in the brief relates to the contracts clause claim. We're not arguing due process and equal protection or any of those other arguments that may have been advanced at some earlier point.
Well, let me ask you about the question of the right of the township to have preserved its rights. Why did the township not take steps to preserve its rights?
Well, I guess the technical answer is I don't know, or perhaps it's not in the record, because this TIF was passed back in 99, then the statute was in 2004, mm-hmm. and I'm not trying to pass the buck to anybody, but we weren't there in 2004 when the statute was passed. And so we don't really...
But doesn't that undermine particularly a constitutional argument that the township could have preserved its rights but just didn't do so?
Well, I don't think so, because we have this contractual right. And I might add that before 2004, covenants like this, I don't believe, were uncommon because of the fact that there could be competing exemptions prior to the law being passed in 2004, which set up a mechanism. And that was in my own humble opinion, the most likely source reading the documents, why that was included in this TIF. I've seen it in other ones, because they were protecting, and these TIFs, while relatively new, do go back, I believe, into, I know personally, at least from the early 90s and perhaps even before that. So they have been around for a while, and all that time, there really wasn't anything addressing competing exemptions. So this was an important contractual right at the time the whole TIF was approved, and then the developer service agreement, when it came down by who was going to be paying for it and responsible. And you've touched on another point on that is the minimum service payment, which is not tied to taxes. And
Your thought.
My thought is that you have this minimum service obligation unrelated to taxes or the TIF to protect that obligation so that somebody down the chain of title, it keeps passing. So until the TIF, until that 20 years expires, the subsequent owners have that obligation to pay that minimum. So thank you.
Thank
I appreciate
you, Mr.
the extra time.
This case will be submitted, and the court will advise the parties of its decision.